But we're going to talk technology now, and I'm joined by Fevzi Toekalp, editor of GadgetDetective.com. You can follow him on Twitter as well, at GadgetDetective. And he's with me for the next 25 minutes or so, up till 3. So if you've got a question of a tech nature, then do call or text or tweet. And we are going to talk a bit as well about tech in the hot weather, about how to keep cool. If you've got a question in that area as well, do call 0345 6060 973, text 84850 and tweet at LBC. Morning, Fevzi.
Morning.
So a couple of things I want to talk to you about. First of all, can you just tell us a little bit more about this online safety bill? Because this has become a bit of an issue. There's a row going on now about whether it's going to be delayed or scrapped or whether it should have happened at all. Can you give us a kind of quickie guide to what the point of it was?
Yeah, well, this is a very broad-ranging piece of legislation that's being proposed in the online safety bill, and the government has said it was its manifesto commitment to make the UK the safest place in the world to be online whilst defending free expression. And that, you know, therein lies the difficulty, isn't it? Because the more you restrict, the more potential there is to over-regulate, and particularly because the government is requiring in many areas for the large social media companies to act preemptively, you know, before something is reported, to actually prevent it from appearing. And given that there are potentially fines of 10% of global turnover for these very large businesses like Facebook, for example, there has to be a danger that they will throw out the free speech baby with the abusive bathwater. And, you know, that's the worry. And it is, you know, you were talking about very wide-ranging legislation, and on the face of it is motherhood and apple pie. I mean, who doesn't want to protect children and provide support for adults and, you know, do away with all these problems? They're looking at introducing three new pieces of legislation, new offences. You get the barring of something called, and I quote, genuinely threatening communications, which can be a threat to kill or rape or to cause financial harm, or coercive and controlling behaviour. Now, that gets into the area where one of the candidates was talking about, you know, hurt feelings and so forth. So we go from quite extreme behaviour to some behaviour which is not as easy to define, much less detect. Equally, they talk about harmful communications, and it gives an example. This is such as a domestic abuser sending an ex-partner a photograph of their front door to frighten them. It's a very specific example. However, offensive content with no intent to cause serious distress would not be illegal. So the companies who are being expected in the first instance to cut this out must determine whether a threat is genuinely threatening and whether a harmful communication was harmful with intent, and also the new offence of knowingly false communication. So they have to know or determine whether something is not only false but is knowingly false.
So there is the problem, as you say, is to get this sort of balance between protecting but not also destroying the right to free speech. And the view seems to be that this bill hasn't got it quite right. They're still arguing over it.
I think the whole problem with this is it seeks to cover a myriad of problems, from revenge porn, hate crimes, fraud, fraudulent advertising, sale of illegal drugs, facilitation of suicide, people smuggling and sexual exploitation. You know, exploitation, we can all be against those things. But what you're going to end up with is online companies having to make millions of decisions a day on things that often, you know, would be the subject of great debate and even legal action. It's going to be very, very difficult. I would have said a better way of going at this, and it's more controversial but more likely in my view to succeed, is to look at the business models of these companies. These companies make their money by encouraging us to stay on their platform for as long as possible, encouraging us to share content as much as possible to make it enticing for our friends and families to stay online. And that's how fake news spreads. I mean, there was famously the whistleblower from Facebook said that there was a discussion internally within Facebook about whether users of Facebook should be able to pass on articles that they hadn't even opened and read, because obviously Facebook knows whether you've opened or something or something. Mm. And you know, the allegation is that Zuckerberg very much wanted them to be able to do that, because the more stuff that was spread around from user to user, the more, you know, enticing it was for people to stay on the platform. But if you actually did away with that, if you said, and this is rather controversial, but if you said, you know what, no more free membership of Facebook, everyone has to pay £1 a month or something like that. Okay, a lot of people would not pay the pound a month, but a lot of people would. And that's how they made their money. And then you take away the incentive for them to allow the promulgation of this sort of material. Because as long as it's built into the algorithms, you know, to share certain types of information, to allow the sharing of certain types of information, we're going to have a problem. And the online safety bill will not do the job. And in that sense, it probably not fit, and it probably can't be made fully fit.
Okay, now let me ask you about the other ways of protecting yourself online. From a more personal point of view, and I don't think this is something that's covered by the bill, but it seems to me, I don't know, I'm getting more and more annoyed by the feeling that I'm basically being spied on with my online presence from various websites and goodness knows what. I mean, I just flick up the Safari on my iPad here, and it says in the last 7 days, yeah, Safari has prevented 137 trackers, yeah, from profiling you and hidden your IP address from known trackers. Well, that's the ones they've managed to stop.
Yeah.
But many people are clearly gathering all this data about, yeah, me, and, yeah, I don't really care. But if,
well, you should care.
Well, I mean, I don't in the sense that I'm not sure any harm will come to it, but I'm annoyed by it.
But the collecting of your information is in and of itself a harm, because the taking away of privacy, the taking away of your ability to communicate freely without thinking that communications are being monitored, is basic to a democracy.
Well, yes, exactly. And I think what makes it really obvious is that I buy a wheelbarrow, and then the next minute I'm seeing articles and I'm getting emails about wheelbarrows and, yeah, adverts, and it seems to be all going on in the background, and I just got a feeling many of us are not really aware of this. And is there any, unless you become like Nick and have a dumb phone and just try and avoid the internet completely, and I don't blame him really,
yeah,
is there any other way of just not being on this grid all the time?
Well, it is difficult. I mean, you know, it has been said that Windows 11 is arguably the biggest piece of spyware ever created. The whole basis, I mean, it's so interesting that, you know, Microsoft used to pour scorn on Google for its business model of, you know, providing free apps through Android and Chrome browser and all the rest of it, but then using them to, you know, collect information upon us. And yet, Microsoft, having found itself as the only provider of operating systems that was trying to sell them for money, because, you know, Apple's Mac OS and iOS and iPad OS are all given away free with the device and updated free with the device, and then you've got Linux and so forth, and they were the only ones trying to make money out of it. So what they did was they changed Windows 11 into something that just gathered information on us, and certain features don't work unless, I mean, the speech feature in Windows 11 doesn't work unless you're willing to give up your location. Why?
Yeah.
It should not be necessary. So what can you do? Okay.
Well, here's a question to throw in whilst you're answering this. Just from Bruce has just texted to say, is using a VPN worth the cost? So I just throw that in if that's part of your answer.
A VPN changes who you're having to put your trust in. So at the moment, so a VPN is a virtual private network. You can think of it as an information pipe between you and the internet. And in theory, it can protect you in certain circumstances, but not in others. So, if you're in a coffee shop, if you're not using a VPN and you're connecting to the internet via their Wi-Fi, then anyone else on that Wi-Fi, if they have the right tools and they're freely available, could interrogate your machine, copy files off it, and mess with you in various ways. So a VPN in those circumstances is worthwhile. But instead of now putting your trust in the internet service provider, who is certainly monitoring you and has to monitor you by law and keep records on every website that you visit by law for, 6 months. But now you're putting your trust in the VPN company, and it's very hard to know which VPN company is on the up and up. There are free VPNs, and I'm sure some of them are legitimate. Possibly most of them are legitimate, but, some of them could be a front for the CIA or the FBI or whatever. You know, you don't know who's actually operating these things. But if you want a VPN, make sure you pay for one. Try and get one that's either in the European Union or at the very least outside the United States, because data flowing through the United States is accessible to them under their laws.
Right.
A VPN will do that, but it's not really going to...
So what's the point mainly of having a VPN then?
If you
can still have everything you do effectively monitored, what's the benefit of a VPN?
Because it's monitored by the people at the other end of the connection, but it can prevent other people in your locale on the same Wi-Fi network as you from accessing your device whilst you're accessing it. So I would say either use a VPN or use your data on your cell phone connection rather than the local Wi-Fi. I wouldn't trust local Wi-Fi
right.
in public areas, and particularly ones that, you know...
But if you're just using your own internet connection, does the VPN give you anything?
It does, because it obfuscates your traffic in terms of your internet service provider.
I see, right.
So it does give you that. But what it doesn't do is protect you from the people that are spying on your browsing habits, from the multiplicity of apps and programs and operating systems that are all designed to continually collect information
right.
from you, place cookies on your device, which, as you mentioned about the wheelbarrow, that's one way in which that's done, is the placing of a small file. So if I go to, let's say, Amazon, and I look at a wheelbarrow on Amazon, Amazon may place a cookie on my device, which can then be read by the next website I visit, and they realise that recently I looked at wheelbarrows, and then they'll show me an advert for that. So Google and Facebook, although they're not the only ones, they're the two biggest collectors of information against us. So we have to take care. It's very interesting that as Apple has cracked down on what Facebook and the ilk can do, Facebook's revenue has gone noticeably down, and Facebook is now the enemy of Apple, and Facebook has found and is finding technical workarounds what Apple is trying to do. You know, they're trying to abuse our information in spite of us, in spite of Apple as well.
And when that thing comes up saying, do you accept all these cookies and all of this stuff?
Yeah.
And most people I know just go, yes, 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 accept all, whatever, yeah. have it all, because life's too short. And so if you're doing that, are you then allowing that website to basically spy on potentially
yes.
everything else that you do on the web?
Yes, and what people don't realise is that there's this whole global network of information brokers. So this information gets funneled up and packaged up by these brokers, and then is sold on block to all sorts of advertisers or insurance companies, medical insurance companies, all sorts of businesses buy that data. And whilst some of it is in theory anonymized, data that's anonymized can be de-anonymized by triangulating data. If you've got three pieces of anonymized data, you can often combine them to work out who someone is. And we really have to be careful because, there are great advantages to using these new health monitoring gadgets, you know, be it your smartwatch or what have you. You know, they can save lives, they can monitor your heart rate, they can check, you know, all sorts of things that are important. But you have to think about, you know, all that information, very personal information about your well-being. You know, these devices could detect early onset dementia, for example, or Parkinson's. You know, there are devices now that start to do this sort of thing. Just imagine if that information fell into the hands of one's employer or a medical insurance company or a prospective employer. And it's not impossible because, I mean, look, for example, Google bought Fitbit, one of the biggest companies that sell these sorts of devices. And you have to think very carefully, and you know I personally make the judgment, what is the value of it to my health and what is the risk to me in that information getting out?
Interesting. Well, we're going to come back and talk about dealing with the heat in a moment. I hope we'll have Fevzi's guides to buying a fan, amongst other things. So we'll come back with that. Fevzi Turkalp's still with us as well. I wanted to ask you, Fevzi, about the hot weather. What advice have you got from a tech point of view? I've bought a fan on the basis of advice from listeners, and I must say I'm very pleased with it. It makes a difference. Fevzi?
Yeah, I'm here.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Fans, it's very interesting because actually fans slightly raise room temperature because it's got a motor running, but the way in which they work, of course, is they cause a flow of air across the moisture on your skin, which causes that moisture to evaporate, which an evaporation has a cooling effect. That's how air conditioners cool and fridges and so forth, they evaporate. So as far as fans go, I suppose if you're just looking at a simple fan, you've got various things. One of them is how much air they move. And it's, in my opinion, much bigger to have a larger fan with a larger diameter blade that spins more slowly than a smaller fan that has to spin more quickly to shift the same amount of air. And the reason is that a larger fan has a much lower pitch, which is quieter and less obtrusive, whereas a smaller fan, you know, it would have to be more than that. Then you can look at devices that are sort of what you might deem fan plus, in that they have a fan that has a radiator mechanism in front of them that has water. So you fill them up with water or indeed ice, and then they blow the air across. So they blow the air across the water or the ice-filled water, and the air that comes out is cooler. Now, that does make a difference. Even small desktop devices that do that can make a difference. The only thing you have to be careful of is what sort of heat is it. If it's a dry heat, that's fine. If it's very humid heat, you're actually increasing the humidity because you're evaporating the water from the tank. You may evaporate, you know, a litre might go over a period of 3 hours or something suddenly pumped into the air. So there is that. Then there has been a large rush on people buying portable air conditioner units. Spending, you know, if you look around now, it's very difficult to find any in stock, and certainly none that can be delivered before Wednesday, interestingly enough. And those are devices that use a refrigerant, a coolant, and they cost typically £300 upwards. Although they're deemed portable, some of these devices easily weigh 30 kilos or more, and so are very difficult to move around. They're very bulky. They're intrinsically quite noisy devices, and they have to vent. If they're not permanently fixed, if they're a portable unit, they have to vent out of a window. So they typically end up being about a metre or a metre and a half from a window, which then you have to have a special adapter so that the pipe that goes out has to have a board around it with a hole cut in it so that you're not having hot air coming back into the property. And it is interesting that I saw an air conditioning unit just the other day, and it had a pipe, an exhaust pipe that was a metre and a half long, and then it said not to place it in direct sunlight, even after making you place it within a metre and a half of a window. So, but those are very effective. But you know, those are the main ways of cooling. The other thing I would say to you, just a little trick in terms of your windows, open your windows when the temperature, I mean, it sounds obvious, but open your windows when the temperature outside is cooler than the temperature inside. Once that balance changes as the temperature rises outside towards midday and early afternoon, you're better off closing your windows and drawing your curtains. The other thing is, all your electronic devices generate a certain amount of heat, even the ones on standby. So you could actually just go around and unplug a load of things as well. You'll save a little bit of money and you'll just generate less heat. And the same, particularly for television sets on standby, some of the older, even the flat screen ones that are older, do generate, you know, if you put your hand on top of a computer monitor or a TV set, even in standby, you can often feel the heat coming off it.
Yeah, and, especially TVs.
Yeah, and if you have 20 of those devices sitting around your living room, and people do often do now, you know, that's significant. And you're adding to the heat. One more thing. Some people, I talked about drawing the curtains. Some people have been buying heat reflective foil and sticking it to their windows. So you have to clean your window, affix it, depending on the foil, either on the inside or the outside of the glass, and then it reflects the heat out before it even has a chance to go in and heat up your curtains.
A couple of comments have come in here. Kay says, my top tech tip, buy a packet of sticker dots to put over the camera on your phone, tablet and laptop. Do you think people should cover up the cameras?
Yeah, I mean, some webcams now have got little sliding bits of plastic that you can slide over the lens. Unfortunately, you can't do the same with the microphones or the GPS circuitry inside your phone. So, you know, it's very limited. You know, your smartphone in particular is the most sophisticated spying device
that's used, is it? People will actually access your camera.
Yeah, and sometimes they'll access it illicitly, and you know, you hear about, you know, Israeli security companies selling software and it's used to hack the phones of, well, supposedly only terrorists, but sometimes journalists and dissidents and so forth. But then you have to look at the permissions on the multiplicity of apps that we put on our phones and tablets. And what I would say to you is have a spring clean. I know it's no longer spring, but have a spring clean of your devices. Look at any, just like, you know, when you spring clean in your home, you say, oh, I haven't used that for 6 months or a year or 2 years. Delete it. You can always reinstall it if you want it. Delete it off your system. Only have what you're actually going to use on your device, because every piece of software is a potential risk to you. And then for the ones that you've got and the ones that you're considering downloading in the future, look at the permissions. What is it? What are you allowing it to access in your phone? So, for example, it could access your location, could access the camera or the microphone or your contact list. So I had it where I was looking at a smartwatch, and the first thing that it wanted to do was download my contact list. And the reason they wanted to do it was just to message people in my contact list to say that I'm now using this device and would they like to do it as well.
Not then, on your own business.
Yes, and there was no way of using the watch without consenting.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
So I didn't test the item. I sent it back without testing it for that reason.
Gareth says, I've just downloaded the data that Google have on all my activity. It came to over 10 gigabytes.
Yes, yeah.
Good grief.
And you can do that. Oh, by the way, if you've got the smart speaker from Amazon.
Oh, the one beginning with A?
Yeah. You can tell it, name beginning with A, delete everything I said.
Really?
And you can tell it to delete everything you said today.
Or ever.
Yeah, or ever. And although it gives you a warning saying, I may not be able to recognise your voice and respond to you as well, actually, I haven't really noticed a difference. So if, for example, you inadvertently plan a bank robbery in front of one of these devices, then you can tell it to forget.
Oh, right. And or does it remember that you've told it to forget?
yes.
Right, we've got to go. Thank you very much, Fevzi. Great to talk to you. That's Fevzi Turkalp there, editor of GadgetDetective.com. You can follow him on Twitter as well at Gadget Detective, and look out for his Gadget Detective podcast as well.